You're with Clement Magnatella on 702.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
Seven minutes after 9 o'clock. Dumelang, happy Monday. Welcome to the Clement Magnatella Show. It's great to have you with us here on 702. I hope you had a great weekend. In fact, I hope you're having a great morning so far. I'm wishing you all your best with your plans. Vandaag. How was the Two Oceans Marathon? Did you do the ultra? Did you do the half marathon yesterday? How did you do? Congratulations to all of you who ran the Two Oceans Marathon here in Cape Town. The Queen, Gerda Steyn, didn't just win her fifth Two Oceans Marathon title, but she broke her own record. She finished the 56 kilometer in 3 hours, 26 minutes and 54 seconds. How crazy is that? Well done to Unalinna Konkobe as well for winning the men's race in a time of about 3 hours, 9 minutes and 30 seconds. If you ran the Two Oceans Marathon, let me know how that was on 011-883-0702. That's how we kick off the 702 open line. The WhatsApp line, 072-702-1702.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
011-883-0702. That's the number to dial. You can send us your WhatsApps on 072-702-1702.
Hi, Clement. Happy new week. Yeah, I did the Two Oceans. I did the half marathon. A lot of drama came with it. My phone died in the middle of the night before. And when I did wake up, it was 6. I was supposed to start at 6:30. But to cut the long story short, I did the race. I tried to catch up with my groups and bad strategy, but at the end of the day, I did it. I enjoyed it as usual. It was my second one. And what was funny and crazy is that I did the exact same time to the second in terms of the time I ran last year. So I'm pretty happy with myself for not having done worse. I would have liked to have done better, but happy to have given the exact time as last year. I had fun at Stombi from Glen Vista. Thank you. Have a good day.
Well done. Have a good day to you. That's always my biggest fear, waking up too late for the marathon. In fact, you reminded me of a story a friend of mine shared with me. A running mate of mine sent me a message because I checked with him because he had an injury heading into the ultra, the Two Oceans Marathon. So I checked with him, how did it go? And he's like, yo, I woke up late and I got to the start late. I managed to start 2 minutes before they cut off at the start. And then I ran for 28 kilometers only to be cut off because of the 3 hour mark of the race. So this friend of mine only managed to do 28 kilometers, then got put on a bus. So yeah, looks like there was a lot of drama around people waking up late for the Two Oceans Marathon. Oh, I was so envious. I was so envious. I couldn't run the Two Oceans. I didn't even enter to do it because I'm doing the London Marathon this coming Sunday. So I need to start resting. I did do my long runs. I did my last long run yesterday. On Saturday and yesterday, I just did a young 10K recovery run. This week, I'm now beginning to get ready for the London Marathon.
Your voice,
your station,
your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Magnatella
on 702.
Dow on the WhatsApp line says, Clement, what happens in the Middle East over the weekend? What happened? I think that's what you mean to say there, Dow. Yeah. What happened in the Middle East over the weekend was pure theater. Iran, Israel, and the USA were all on it. Iran decided to attack Israel, but they give them 5 hour notice. I'm no West Point graduate, but the secret to winning a battle is the art of surprise. Iran gets to tell its citizens, look, we responded to Israel for killing our generals. Israel gets to tell its citizens, look, how well we protect you. And America finally gets its billions and arms deal, which has been hanging in Congress for months approved, and the media is complicit in all of this. That's a message from Dow. Dow, I'll get some analysis on this at 10 o'clock. But yeah, I'm happy for us to start this conversation on the 702 open line. Do you think this was choreographed? Because that's a sense that I'm getting too. Huh? And as Dow says, the secret to winning a battle is the art of surprise. In this case, we are told that the United States actually had a conversation with Iran before Iran fired these drones and missiles to Israel. They had a conversation already. And many of these missiles were intercepted with the help of even the U.S. The U.S. has indicated that we are not getting involved. I mean, you even look at how Israel is responding to this. It's quite suspect. They're like, well, in fact, they're divided. The cabinet is divided on how they should be responding. Some are saying, well, we don't know, but we'll probably respond at the right time. But this is not an attack that cost lives. Remember the Israel's attack on that diplomatic side in Syria, Iran's diplomatic premises, that killed about 7 Iranian generals. But this attack in retaliation didn't kill anyone. So what's going to be Israel's response? If you've been following these developments in the Middle East, please give me a call on 011-883-0702 or send me a WhatsApp voice note. So there's a story that our reporter Alpha Ramoshana has been running on Eyewitness News this morning about the scourge of Nyawope, which is a form of heroin in Gauteng. It's very well documented. I mean, you probably know about it if you've been or you are from a township, or if you've been around the streets of Johannesburg, of Durban, of Cape Town, any city really. You can see how particularly young people are literally being destroyed by this drug, right? Now, I want to know how you deal with something like this, because there have been various interventions for children who are hooked on this particular drug. Some 2.5 hours away from South Africa's economic hub lies Emelo, and this is what Alpha was reporting about. It's a small town in Mpumalanga where the youth there is reeling from this drug and this addiction. And Eyewitness News took some time to spend with these young people there to just understand the extent. And it's just so sad every time you see how people are so addicted to this drug. And I want to know from you, how do you manage something like that? Because I've told you a story of a close friend of mine that I grew up with, who was a neighbor, who was a very good close friend of mine. Every time I'm home, you see how he's been destroyed by Nyawope. And sometimes it feels like we've normalized this in our communities, in our townships. And I want to know what communities you think can do to fight back against this drug and its brazenness, because a lot of people really just ignore it now. You know, back in the day, it was a thing where you used to be shocked if you find out one of your loved ones smokes Nyawope. Today, it's almost like it's normal, but it's destroying lives so bad. I've got neighbors at home who used to lock even the grocery cupboard. They used to lock the fridge. They used to put the fridge, in fact, in the bedroom, one of the bedrooms, and lock the bedroom door. Because when you're hooked on this drug, all you want to do is get the next fix. So whether you steal, whether it doesn't matter what you do, but you're so desperate that you want to get the next fix. It's really, really, really so sad for me when I observe how this is destroying so many young people. Maybe you can share your own experiences with us on 011-883-0702.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
Koketso, you're calling us from Joburg. Good morning.
Yes, hi Clement.
Hey, Tara.
Yes, yeah, I just wanted to just say that I think this Iran-Israel conflict must be seen in context, right? So when Israel attacked that Iranian embassy, they basically started this whole situation where they put Iran in a situation where they had to retaliate. So I think when we look at it, it shouldn't just be like Iran just attacked them out of the blue. It should be that they attacked an embassy, which is obviously taken as part of Iranian territory. And that is an act of war. According to Article 51, nations are on their right to defend themselves. So, yeah. I think we need to sort of put it in that context, because, and we need to now start speaking about more about the reasons of why is it that Bibi Netanyahu would want to start a war with Iran. What is he trying to do? Because there's speculation that he's trying to make sure that he pulls the US and the UK into a larger war so that he can remain in power. Because they've obviously lost in Gaza. They haven't been able to achieve any of their targets in Gaza. So he wants to basically drag them into like a larger war. So we need to look at his motivations for that embassy strike on the 1st of April, because this is basically what has brought us to this brink of chaos, if you want to put it that way, So I think let's look at his reasoning, and let's even ask the experts, like, what do they think his reasoning is for doing that? Mm-hmm. Because they obviously should have thought it out before attacking a sovereign country, in essence, when they did that embassy attack. So, how did they see this playing out? And I think in a way it does actually work out to his benefit, because look at how now everybody's talking about this Iran-Israel attack. No one is talking about what's currently happening in Gaza now. People are not getting aid. There's a famine. There's daily massacres. People are being killed. It's almost like it's actually working for him, because now the attention is completely off the actions of Gaza, and it's onto this Iran attack. So he's benefiting from it.
Yeah, look, and I don't think it will be for a very long time, Koketso, because thank you so much for your contribution. I appreciate it. And I'll ask the analysts about this at 10 o'clock, but I really think it's not going to last long, especially because people are already seeing what's going on. Like, they can see that this looks so choreographed, because these things matter, and I know sometimes people play on conspiracy theories here. But sometimes it matters it took 13 days for Iran to respond. Any country, when you kill 7 of their generals, they're going to be responding. And when they respond, they're not going to warn you. This case, 13 days go past and Iran doesn't respond. And then Iran sort of gives Israel a warning. They talk even to the U.S., and then they launch these missiles. Of course, they're intercepted. No one has died as a result of this attack. According to the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, only a 7 or 8 year old young girl, was injured. But it really looks like it's choreographed, because you want the citizens of Iran to know that, look, we have responded. Because the citizens will always expect you to respond to protect them, to protect the state of Iran. And maybe that's what's happened. Joe Biden says, we're not going to get involved in any counteroffensive, because they too realize here that even in Iran's retaliation, no one died. But in Israel's attack on Iran, 7 people died. Khotatso, you're calling us from Pretoria. You ran the Two Oceans Marathon as well.
Hi, Clement. Yes, I did. It was my first one. I did the whole marathon, the 56, and it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was beautiful, and I'm sure going back next year.
How did you finish? What time did you finish?
I finished at 6:09.
Okay. Amazing, Khotatso. Well, congratulations to you. Is this your first ultra, or have you done others before?
No, I've done Omdidam. I've done Irene. A week before I did Irene. Then it was.
Okay, yeah. Omdidam was so difficult for me. My goodness. That was so tough. But well done to you for your first Two Oceans Marathon, and good luck for next year as well. Maybe I'll be joining you for that one.
Hey, Clem. So on the Nyaupe topic, back in my village, there is a mother whose son is addicted, very, very highly addicted. So he started stealing from his home and then the neighbors, and then obviously now it causes, you know, quarrels between the neighbors and the mom. So unfortunately for the mom, or sadly for the mom now, she decided that she's going to give him money to avoid the neighbors, you know, because you know how it is. You have people judging you and pointing fingers at you because now all of a sudden wheelbarrows are disappearing, gates are being, you know, dug out, and a whole lot of things. So unfortunately for that mom, or sadly for that mom, she started giving him money to feed his addiction.
Sure. And at sometimes parents are forced to do things like that, because people who are addicted to nyawobe, they are willing to do anything to get the next fix. So if it means they must steal at the neighbors or steal from the neighbors, they will do that. So imagine being pushed to a point where now you must give this child money, even when you know what they're going to do with it, to avoid a situation where they steal from the neighbors and they ruin your relationship with the neighbors. It's so bad. It really, 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 really is so bad. And as I say, my concern is there was a time when this used to shock us. These days when you hear that, oh yeah, that other one is also addicted to nyaobe, you almost like, oh, it's normal. Like, oh, that's so sad, and you move on. How do we fight the scourge of nyaobe, the scourge of addiction to this drug? Because it's killing the youth. It really is. The young people that do not have jobs at home, young people that are desperate for opportunities, and part of how they deal with that depression, part of how they deal with just their lack of hope, is to one, go drink, or two, get a fix. Because temporarily, you almost forgot, you almost forget about your troubles. But yo, once you get hooked to this drug, it's very difficult to come out. What can communities do? What can families do? It's so sad. It's 9:31.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
25 minutes before 10 o'clock, it's the 702 open line. You can share your thoughts with us on 011-883-0702. Maybe you want to talk about this attack by Iran on Israel. Maybe you want to talk about nyaobe, the scourge of nyaobe, the addiction that is ravaging a lot of young people in communities. Or maybe you want to weigh in on just supporting independent journalism. I saw a tweet, in fact, let me see if I can find it for you. I see Gareth Cliff responded to a tweet. I told you earlier about Daily Maverick that has decided to shut down today. They're saying they want to demonstrate that without journalism, our democracy and economy will break down. So they're shutting down today to try and show how important it is to support independent journalism, right? They want to highlight the global state of emergency in journalism because they believe that it's experiencing a market failure and is at a risk of collapse. And I see Gareth Cliff responded to the tweet and says, I don't agree. The internet, not journalism, is essential. And I wonder if you agree with those thoughts. Is it the internet, unregulated as it is, that is more essential than journalism? And how do you support independent journalism yourself? Do you have apps? Do you have specific organizations that you donate to because you see the incredible work that they do? Let me know. Imran, you're calling us from Sandton.
Yes, sir.
You want to talk about this attack on Israel by Iran. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come in. Yeah, I wanted just to bring a bit of context into this because a lot of people don't seem to have been following this whole situation between Iran, Gaza, Hezbollah, and the Yemenis and whatnot. There's one that we need to understand is that even last year on the 7th of October, the Iranians were greatly involved when Hamas launched that attack on Israel, on Israel's land. So the attack of the Israelis at the embassy of Iran it is not by mistake or it is not by coincidence. It is actually a response to this terrorist involvement, to the plans that which Hamas had with them in attacking Israel on the 7th of October. And besides that, Iran has been involved indirectly and also directly through their proxies, such as Hezbollah, such as the Yemenis, that which have also been shooting rockets, the short rockets actually earlier this year towards Israel to call for the ceasefire, that if there's no ceasefire in Gaza, they will continue to attack Israel. So these are not separated events, but it's actually a continuation of what Iran has been doing and in influencing the enemies of Article of Israel against the state of Article of Israel. So the incidents are not separate at all. So Iran may appear to be a victim now, but Iran is actually behind every terrorist activities in the Middle East. That is why they have been enemies with the Saudis for the past couple of years, because the Saudis, remember, there's been at war with the Yemenis, isn't it? And who were supporting the Yemenis? It was the Iranians. That is why when these drones were shot, were released from Iran, the Jordanian army also shot down some of those drones. The Saudi army, they also shot down some of Article of those drones. So when you look at these things from the eyes of Article of the media, sometimes you would think that in the Middle East, everyone is really anti-Israel. In Israel, they know the involvement of Article of Iran in terms of Article of the wars that which are happening and terrorist activities. You understand? So right. I just wanted to bring context into that.
Okay, Imran, thank you so much for giving us your contribution. Let's go to Simpiwe in Centurion. Simpiwe, you want to talk about Nyaupe? Hi.
Oh, yes. Good morning, Clement.
Morning.
I just want to make an emphasis on the Nyaupe story, right? I think we're all concerned by the effort that is being put in actually addressing these guys or the Nyaupe issues is not good enough from everybody. As a country, from government, from the society, from the male figures, and everybody within the townships and the areas. This thing is killing our boys, and maybe we're just, you know, putting it back until you see it happen in your eyes, where you can see someone future just perishes because of we're not putting in enough effort. From a government perspective, I know for a fact, we try to put a boy's life, which unfortunately had to deal with this thing, and at this present moment, there's nothing we can do. So we need as much help as possible. We've got organizations that claim that they're actually helping the society, especially the boys, because this is a disease that actually kills our boys totally in the township. So we need those guys to come forward, not for the publicity stunts, but to actually really take the boys under the wing and try to actually assist them to fight this thing. It's definitely killing. Like you mentioned, we've just gotten used to it. It's normal. These boys been doing this thing, stealing, and you know, yeah.
I think we need. Simpio, have you seen how even like the most, like the guys that you grew up with or guys you saw growing up who were so smart, and they were, you know, they were smart and they always wanted to be clean and wear nice, and then once they get hooked into the drug, you almost can't recognize them anymore because they stopped. They don't wash
it. No, that's 100% Clement. Like, No, that's 100% Clement. Even the looks, the guys were looking all good, you know, smart and all of that. But I'm trying to emphasize that maybe in this type of platform, as men, we need to emphasize that we really need the help. And it's not good enough for us to just watch and say, no, these guys, we need these type of NGOs to come forth and try to fight the guys, to try and fight the disease and this bad habit that's happening. Yeah, I think everyone in his own right, in his own space, can try and fight this thing, but we cannot fight alone. My brother-in-law has been into multiple rehabs in Pretoria, but still nothing is happening.
Mm.
So what type of help do we actually require? You know, we need those type of NGOs to come forth and maybe try to assist. And we need the statistics as to how many people have been helped, or how can we fight this thing? Because saying it's killing our nation, our boys, is not good enough. Yeah.
True. Yeah. Simpiwe and Centurion, thank you. I remember the Gauteng Premier had said that they, you know, had put some money aside specifically to deal with this issue of the Nyaope addiction in communities. Maybe one day we must just check in with him about how that program that he had announced, I think during his State of the Province address, was it a year or two ago? Must have been 2-3 years ago. How is that going? Maybe we should do that at some point. Mpo, you are in Alberton. Good morning.
Clement, good morning. How are you?
Sure, man.
Good. Hey, Clement, you know what? This thing in Yaupe is a very serious problem. I'm sorry, I'm in Yaupe, Clement. Like it was, all this thing gets home, bro. I have a brother, Otuba Yaupe. He's heavily addicted. As we speak, yesterday we had to rush him to hospital because he's just not coping anymore. This thing, the way he was like, the implement. If you could see him, you would not recognize me if you knew him, you know?
Yeah.
I got home yesterday as I responded to a distress call. When I got home, the guy couldn't walk. He can't breathe. He struggles to breathe in. He struggles to breathe out. Clement, his face is swollen. His feet are swollen. I don't know. We don't know what to do anymore. We've tried multiple places already for rehab. But also we've been advised that it has to come from him. He needs to admit that he needs help. And only then the initial help can start, you know. And also when he gets from rehab, he goes back to the same cycle, same community, same friends, and then you know. So you can't see him anymore. How much ever that guy, it breaks my heart. Like I'm here right now as I speak about this, Clement. This thing is destroying community. The community, we're not getting any help from the cops, and these guys don't go to great distances to buy this thing. It's being sold by community members. It's being sold by people that we know. Because tell when you call the cops, you're being attacked because, you know, like this thing breaks my heart, bro. Like, I don't want to lie to you. It's sad how this thing is ravaging communities and destroying people's lives. My brother, one of those, just admitted now, one of the smart guys. He was one of the smart guys at school. I was one standard ahead of him. He could do my homework for me. Imagine, the guy was very smart, you know. But to see his life diminishing like this in front of my eyes, like, it really breaks my heart.
Oh.
I can't tell, I'm not getting anymore.
I'm sorry. I can hear how that still, you know, saddens you a lot. I'm sorry to hear about that, and I hope that your brother can find help. And the thing about Nyaope is, you know, many of them, you take them to so many rehab institutions, and they come out and they go back, and you know, yes, there are some people that have managed to just get off the drug. And if you've managed to do that, or you know a family member who has, why don't you call us? Maybe you can share with us, how did they fight that addiction? And we can give the other listeners tips, because almost all of us, many of us, know someone who is addicted to Nyaope. And if when you know the people that are addicted, what they used to look like, how they were before their addiction, and you look at them now, that breaks your heart, because it's almost like it's impossible that this can be the same person. More calls and WhatsApps after the break.
Your voice,
your station,
your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
It's going up to 10 minutes now before 10 o'clock. Let's start with your WhatsApp voice notes on 072-702-1702.
Good morning, Clement. On the story of Nyaope, it's very heartbreaking. I do know two guys from one family. Their parents used to be pastors. When they were kids, they used to be church boys. And life was good until the parents passed away, until they go to high school and grew up and then started on this Nyaope thing. Now the house is such a mess, like they've sold almost everything, even drinking glasses. Like they've sold those things. They've sold the water tank. They sell the frames of the door. It's just heartbreaking, because every day this boy is just out there with something to sell. Like there's no home anymore. relatives have done. They've tried to help them, but they've also given up because it just went too far.
Good morning, Clement. This issue of Nyaupe, man, to some of us is too personal because I broke up with my baby mama and I decided to take my daughter back to Limpopo because I realized, no, she will not ever take care of my daughter because she was networking. And all of a sudden, I find out she's an addict in Pretoria CBD. It's so painful because my daughter is now 9. And every time she asks me, where is mom? I can't even tell. Your mom is an addict. It's so painful.
Morning, Clement. Sure. My brother smokes crystal meth and Nyaupe. So, it's the saddest thing. You know, he steals basically everything, anything he can find. I mean, right now we're going into the winter season. I don't even have a single jacket because he stole all my jackets. And basically means I have to buy jackets again now for me to wear this winter. You know, he just, anything he can grab, he will take it and sell it. He stole sneakers. He stole my son's sneakers, with the load shedding, we don't have lights. He stole the lights. Anything he can grab, he will take and sell. So I think the saddest part is these people were actually buying these items from them because it's still, I think that feel, it encourages them to carry on stealing these things, you know? So it's so sad. I would not wish it on my worst enemy ever. Yeah, this is KB from Pimville.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
Yo, yeah, ne. Imagine your child asking, where is daddy or where is mommy? Where do you even begin to have a conversation with them if that parent is addicted to drugs? Because you want to be transparent, but you're also dealing with a 9-year-old. Yo. Eunice, you're calling us from Kilani. What are your thoughts on Iran and Israel's tensions now that are really rising? Good morning.
Morning, Clement. Clement, the first thing is what has happened here is that this myth of Israeli invincibility has been shattered by the Iranians. That's the first point. The second point is, Clement, one has to look at it carefully that Iran does not share a common border with Israel. So therefore, they had to literally speak to the Jordanians in advance of what they were doing. Now, if one looks at those Arab countries that are around there, the leadership I'm talking of, not the people, you know, most of them are surrogates of the West and the U.S. So therefore, the Jordanians did shoot down some missiles. Now, if you follow, for example, and what he'd be a very good guest for your show, Clement, is the former U.N. weapons inspector, Scott Ritter, where he is writing that clearly Iran used hypersonic missiles and they attacked the two air bases. One was Ramon and the other one was the Nevatim air base. That is where the F-35 plane kept, and they were used to attack the Iranian consulate in Syria. But no one tells you that. So they used hundreds of missiles, knowing the Iron Dome will bring them down. But many went through. So that is why they went in droves with the missiles and the drones. But those two air bases were attacked. So Israel at the moment is taking, really looking back and saying they're not invincible with whatever systems they have in place here. And one has to look very carefully, Clement, that Israel has attacked a sovereign state like Lebanon for decades now and has destroyed Lebanon. They've attacked Syria numerous times, including Iran. If in the last few years, Clement, Israel has, with covert operations, assassinated many nuclear scientists in Tehran and elsewhere in those areas there. So the fact of the matter is that, you know, this has shown that Israel is not invincible. If you look at the port of Eilat, the biggest port in Israel, Clement, it's been attacked by the Houthis with drones. That port is not functional at the moment. For the last few months, it's not functional, and half the people who have worked there were settlers have been retrenched
But you see, the mass media would not tell you all these many things here. So it's Israel who is looking for the action, and the action will come their way. And forget the Arabs. Your previous caller who said that, Iran involves themselves in terror activities. One can define what is terror activities. You know, if you, Clement, you travel a lot. The next time you meet a Palestinian, Clement, anywhere in the world, and you tell him you're from South Africa, Clement, the first thing he will do is he will hug you. Why is it that the Palestinians in South Africa took the stand at the United Nations? They were overjoyed because they felt betrayed by the very same Arab leaders and leadership that is around them. So therefore, when they saw an outside country doing what we did, Clement, they were overjoyed. So,
got it. Eunice, thank you for your contribution, my friend. All the way from Kilani. Some more WhatsApp voice notes.
Hi, Clement. Since you are also touching on races together with the listeners this morning, I just wanted to ask, as a social runner, what response do you give to your non-runners when they ask you, what position did you get at a race? This other friend of mine got a bit irritated last week when he was asked that question, and his time had improved, you know, pace, CNN. But the masses just wanted to know, so, okay, we hear that you did well, but what position did you get? So, whether as a social runner, what response do you give when people, you know, ask you that question? You can also ask your fellow listeners, Baba Matang, Shab, Junju from North Riding.
I like that. I like that. Oh, I wish you sent it earlier so I can hear from the fellow runners. I deal with that a lot with my mom. And some friends, I mean, most of the friends understand when you're a social runner. But my mom never just doesn't get it. She's like, wait, you're going to run 42Ks for what? I was like, no, it's like, okay, are you going to win money? I was like, yeah, mama, there are people who win money for this, but they're like athletes. Like, they train the whole year. I'm not going there to compete. It's like, so why are you running? So I deal with that a lot, and I often have to explain to my mom, and I'm still in the process of breaking it down so she understands that social runners, we just love running. She's like, so you just want to travel the world to run, but you're not going to win, and you're not competing to win? No. Imagine also trying to explain to my mom that, oh, I just got my personal best. I finished in sub 4, or if it's a half marathon, sub 2 hours. Oh, yeah. I hear you. I deal with that on a daily. It's 2 minutes before 10.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
Good morning, Clement Madimeja. I think we've been singing this song for years and decades about drugs. But even if the community can raise their hands or do whatever, our government officials, they know, just because some of them, they even deliver these drugs to the community. So talking about it, I don't think we will get the solution, just because the same people that we trust that they can help us, they are the ones who are helping this drug laws to deal with this. Thank you. This is Mbija here.
Yeah, I don't know, guys. Maybe we must do a whole Mbizo. Yeah, maybe we must arrange an outside broadcast and go to one of the communities and bring in the various stakeholders. As I said, Banyaza Lusufi once said, I think it was 2022, he said they will take all the Nyaope children to a state farm, those that are addicted to this drug, to a state farm, including homeless people. They will stay there and be rehabilitated. And at the time, he had said government has been funding NGOs to deal with this scourge of Nyaope addiction, and yet the problem still persists. So he's been trying to come up with other ways to deal with it, and maybe what we should do is to just check what is government doing to intervene And what's the success of those interventions? Because we cannot continue as if everything is normal. This is abnormal. It's killing families. It's killing young people. It's a minute after 10.